Getting Away With It by Jill Weinberger. It's a strange thing to kill someone and get away with it. Not to murder them and get away with it, though I'm sure that's quite the feeling all its own. In fact, I've been thinking of it more lately. Of murder. Killing someone deliberately. Because that's what taking a life does to you. It makes you wonder about a lot of things. But I'm getting ahead of myself. There's a reason poor, much-mocked Bulwer Lytton kicked things off on a dark and stormy night. A lot can happen on a dark, stormy night. Violent things, accidental or otherwise. On a night like that, mistakes get made. Details you'd otherwise be quite careful of get missed. And on a night like that, a lot can go unnoticed. Quite horrible events can simply slip under the radar and be gone in the morning, washed away like so much storm-dropped gravel on the road. She came out of nowhere on a night just like that. It was a very curvy road. You wouldn't take it fast on a night like that, a night when the rain and the sleet were mixing in thick sheets, a night when the river running a few yards away was swelling and threatening to wash out the road completely. You'd drive slowly, carefully, if you decided to drive at all. If you were smart, you'd stay an extra night at the B&B and wait for the cold snap the quaint local TV weatherman had promised. Because then you'd be driving along a road freshly plowed of powder, the river frozen and silent beside you. If you were smart, you wouldn't be on that road at all. I was not smart. The reason I wasn't smart was because of Tom. Of course, as my friends were continually telling me, being with Tom in the first place wasn't smart. He was abrasive, unreliable, and not particularly faithful. He was also sexy and clever and wickedly funny. And the first major thing I'd ever done that I wasn't supposed to. I'd spent my whole life showing up on time, turning in papers early, doing all the extra credits. I went straight from PhD. Well, I went to teaching instead of practicing. Why deal with actual patients, the wretched, unpredictable mess of humanity, when you could stand in front of a lecture hall and simply know everything? The fact that someone like Tom was interested in me was probably the biggest part of the attraction. If he wanted me, I must be a whole lot more interesting than I ever thought. I like that idea. Which is how I ended up in a cozy Pennsylvania bed and breakfast in the middle of November with a man I didn't particularly like, but was fairly certain I loved. We were supposed to leave mid-afternoon, but Tom wanted to stay for another cocktail hour. It was free, and Tom loved getting something for nothing. He was good at it, too. While I was sipping my designated driver ginger ale, he was helping himself to the cocktail waitress. By this point, the weather had turned disastrous. I'd been stowing our luggage in plans of staying an extra night when I found them. But there was no way I was spending the night at the scene of my utter humiliation. And Tom wasn't about to let me leave him stranded without a ride home. Besides, he'd just finished with the waitress and felt no need to linger. So that's how we came to be hurtling down a winding country road, ice sleeting down the windshield, river water sloshing over from the bank, and Tom bellowing at me to slow down. He irritated baritone, completely drowning out by my shrieking, running commentary about how this was it. This was the last time. I'd had it with his lies and his cheating and his complete lack of respect for me and for us. And if he thought I was going to... She came out of nowhere. It's amazing how time works. I came around the curve. And the woman was there. Lit, starkly white. More suddenly than anything I've ever seen before or after. And yet that second, it could only have been a second between when I saw her and hit the brakes and when I felt the car make contact. That was the longest single moment of my life. The impact feels much smaller than you'd expect. For such an enormous thing, for 2 tons of metal and wire to hit a human body and crush the life out of it, you would expect the crash to feel like something. But it doesn't feel like hitting another car or even like hitting the concrete parking lot where you pull into a space too fast. It feels like, well, petting an animal. The first thing you notice is the quiet. Right after it happened, there wasn't a sound in the world. Then I heard our ragged breath filling the car. Then the wind howling outside. The sleet hitting the windows. And then I saw the car lights gaping out into the dark, stormy night. Capturing nothing. I didn't see anything in the road. Not the woman, not any blood, nothing. For a second, I let myself think that maybe it hadn't happened at all. That I had only imagined seeing her, imagined the feel of metal hitting flesh. Then I started to shake. Oh God, oh God, oh God! Holy shit, Karen. That was Tom. He was staring at me, his hands clenching and unclenching over and over. Get the phone, I said. What? My cell. It's in the glove compartment. We have to call someone. Who the hell are you going to call? The police. The paramedics. Give me the phone. He just stared at me. So I leaned over to reach across him. He grabbed my arm, just tight enough to hurt a little. Hang on. What do you mean, hang on? We have to call someone. Just think for a second. We don't even know what happened. We don't know what the situation is. I hit somebody with the goddamn car is the situation. Give me the phone. For all you know, she could have just a few scrapes, a broken leg. You could offer to pay her medical bills, settle the whole thing without anyone needing to know about it. Are you out of your mind? She could be dead. I could have killed someone. Well, if she's dead, then calling the police really isn't going to help anyone, is it? I stared at him, thinking maybe I was misunderstanding him. For maybe 20 seconds, I tried to pretend not to understand what he was saying. But he looked back at me, and he didn't flinch. He didn't blink. He knew exactly what he was saying, and he knew I did too. Car, all I'm saying is, let's just go out there and see what we're dealing with. Let's just assess the situation as calmly as we can. That's the thing about Tom. He has the ability to make a certain sort of seductive, awful sense. I found myself nodding my head. We steeled ourselves against the cold and stepped out of the car. The woman was lying on the side of the road, half frozen water rushing all around her body. One leg twisted at an impossible angle. Her eyes stared blankly off towards the river. Her face had a long gash running down the left side. And her back. Her back. She was bent almost completely at the waist. But bent in the wrong way. Backwards. Broken. It didn't take a medical degree to know that the shattered body no longer held any life in it. I staggered, swayed. My vision started to blacken around the edges, and then Tom's grip around me. Tight and warm. His voice strong and low. Nobody even knows we're here. I turned. What? The guy at the hotel gave us directions for the freeway. We live 400 miles away. There's no reason anyone would even know we were on this road. You're insane. We killed her. We didn't kill anybody. Oh, so what? This is my fault now. It's nobody's fault. It was an accident. You weren't drinking or... I was driving fast. I was upset. It was a bad night on a bad road. And it's horrible. It's a terrible thing to happen. But ruining your life won't bring him back. Or her. And this will ruin your life. It will follow you everywhere. For the rest of your life, you'll be the person who did this. And he pointed to the body. And I realized I'd started calling her that. In my mind, the body. At some point, when Tom was talking, his words had started weaving their way through my brain like ivy on an old stone building, taking grip of things that were solid and loosening them. And she'd stopped being the woman and become the body. I heard myself saying, "They said the river's supposed to freeze over tomorrow." Tom gaped at me. I just stared into the churning river water. Anything that went in there tonight probably wouldn't be found until springtime. For someone so cavalier about a vehicular homicide, Tom was surprisingly squeamish about rolling a body into the river. If the weather hadn't been so dreadful that night, driving us to move quickly, we'd probably still be on the riverbank, me haranguing him as he tiptoed the body inch by inch across the sodden ground. As it was, once we'd finished and had made it back to the car, he barely gripped the door when he suddenly turned, ran back, and vomited in the river. I got into the car, blasted the heat, and waited for him to pull himself together. Once we were on the road again, we sat in silence until Tom suddenly said, "If this turns out okay, I swear to God that I'm going to be a better person from now on." I looked over at him. Even with the heat, he couldn't stop shaking. And staring at his profile, I wondered why I'd never noticed that he had such a weak chin. The weatherman was right. The river froze over the next day. Tom found the website for every newspaper in the area, scouring each one day after day for news that someone had found the body. It never came. About Tom. 9 times out of 10, when people make those little bargains with God, if they get what they want, they renege on their promise. They don't quit smoking because their mother came through the surgery okay. They don't stop cheating on their spouse because the pregnancy test comes out positive or negative. But Tom, my mad, bad, dangerous Tom, who'd never so much as kept a promise to show up for dinner on time, actually did become a better person. He goes to church now. He's become scrupulously faithful to me. He volunteers and leaves religious tracts on my pillow in the hope of saving my soul. In short, he's become a clinging, preachy, crushing bore. And the worst thing is, now I trust him even less than I ever did. Not about the small things. If he says he's going to be delivering yams to the poor from 3 until 5, I know with absolute certainty he will be delivering yams to the poor from exactly 3 until exactly 5. But what I don't know is if he can keep our secret. He cares now. He's got a conscience. Even now, he checks those newspaper websites. Spring has come and gone, but he won't stop looking. I don't think he ever will. Which means that though I can barely stand to look at him, I can never, ever leave him. He has a hard enough time living with the truth with me there to keep an eye on him. I have no idea what he'd do if I had to leave him alone. I keep thinking about it too. But it's not guilt. Not at all. I just can't get over the fact that I've gotten over the accident. I killed somebody, and I'm fine. I'm not sad. I'm not sorry. I'm fascinated with myself. I've turned out to be completely different to the person I always thought I was. I thought I was the good girl, the people pleaser. But it turns out, I'm a woman who can kill another person and not feel a thing. It's shocking. No matter how often I think about it, it stays shocking. But it's also exciting. Like I said, killing and getting away with it makes you think. It makes you realize the power we all have. Creating life. That's simple. Everyone knows that. It's as simple as sex. But taking life, that's just as simple. Anyone can do it too. It's just that most people are too tangled up with the shouldn't to see the can. But I don't have the shouldn't in me anymore. I'm on the other side of it. I'm a new person now. And I see clearly everything I'm capable of. And it's strangely dazzling. It's got me thinking about all sorts of things. Tom really has become impossible to live with lately.